The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, Science's online news editor, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about whether data from Google could help in predicting the stock market. Some sort of get-rich-quick scheme here, Dave?
Well, that's what the researchers in this study were trying to find out, Rob. This study is all about the search queries that we submit to Google every day. Google collects all these queries on a site called Google Trends. You can say, go to Google Trends and type in the word cat, and it'll tell you how many people were searching for the word cat over the past week. It just sort of gives a sense for what topics are hot or not in the world of the internet. And the researchers in this study said, well, is there a correlation between what people are typing into Google and the activity of a certain stock? For example, if a lot of people are searching for IBM one week, does that mean a lot of people are buying or selling IBM stock the following week?
And did they find this kind of correlation?
Well, they found a correlation, but it's not a correlation that's going to make you wealthy. What they found is that there is indeed a connection between search terms and the activity of stock. What the researchers did was they analyzed this Google Trends data for 6 years, from 2004 to 2010, and then they compared it to the activity of companies on the S&P 500, and these are the big companies that are traded on the stock exchange. And what they found is that there was a connection between search terms and stock activity.
So stock activity, but not necessarily what the price was or whether people are going to buy or sell.
Exactly. The trends indicated that, say, a particular stock would be bought and sold a lot if it was being talked about a lot on the internet, but it wouldn't tell you if the stock was being bought more than it was sold or sold more than it was bought, which would give you an indication of whether the stock price was going to go up or down.
And that's why no one's going to get rich off of this?
That's why no one's going to get rich, although experts say that that data might actually be in there. It's just that we don't have a high enough resolution to see it yet. The drawback of the study is Google Trends only collects data, or at least only shows data, on a weekly basis. So it says for last week, for the entirety of the week, this is how many people were searching for a particular term like IBM. But it doesn't tell you how many people were searching for a particular term on an hourly basis or even a minute basis. And some experts think that if the data was that high resolution, then you could actually potentially predict what was going to happen to a stock price. Now, it's possible Google has that data, but it's just not sharing it with the rest of us.
I suppose, though, that this understanding of Google Trends data being used to predict the stock market might mean that people hearing about this research will start Google trending themselves and start buying stock based on what they think is going to happen. It's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. But at least what these researchers have shown is you're not going to make any money that way, at least for now, unless Google releases much more real-time data than it's releasing right now.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from predicting the stock market to predicting whether an ancient winged reptile could actually fly.
What was the evidence that this reptile couldn't fly, Dave?
Well, Rob, these were huge animals. Pterosaurs, otherwise known as pterodactyls, these flying animals sometimes you've seen in old movies about dinosaurs. They're not actually dinosaurs, but they lived at the time of the dinosaurs. They really ranged in size, but a lot of them were really, really heavy, hundreds of kilograms. You can figure something that heavy is going to have a really hard time getting off the ground. And because they were so big, researchers recently have said these guys probably couldn't get off the ground. In fact, a couple of recent studies that compared pterosaur fossils to those of modern seabirds said that anything larger than about 41 kilograms is not going to be able to get off the ground, which precludes a lot of pterosaur species. But this new study has come along and said, wait a minute, turns out pterosaurs could fly.
What's the new data here?
What they did was they went back to the fossil record and they really took a very close look at pterosaur bones. Now, that's a lot easier said than done because the fossil record for pterosaurs is really scant. And even when these researchers went back and looked at fossils, they looked at fossils from what's today Texas, Romania, and Kansas. They only found bits and pieces, bones that only make up about 5% of the bodies of these animals. But one interesting thing that they did find is when they looked at the humerus bone, and this is, for us, it's the arm bone, and it would have been part of the wing for pterosaurs, they found that these bones were really, really strong, about twice as strong as they would be for an equivalent size bird. Now, that in itself doesn't mean that these guys could get off the ground, but what the researchers think is that they use these arm or wing bones to almost basically launch themselves off the ground. And you can actually see a really cool video of a reconstruction of this happening on the site. And so the idea would be that, yes, they were really heavy, and that would have precluded liftoff, theoretically, but with these really strong arm/wing bones, they were effectively able to catapult themselves into the air. And once they were in the air, they were able to remain airborne.
Well, chickens can get off the ground, Dave, but they don't really fly very far. What's the evidence that these reptiles were actually flying any distance?
Well, it's a good question, Rob. And actually, the researchers found a really important piece of evidence for the idea that pterosaurs could actually fly a long distance. One of the fossils they looked at was recovered from what used to be millions and millions of years ago, far out in the ocean, hundreds of kilometers from the shoreline. So you wouldn't expect these guys to be launching themselves from the ocean. They must have launched themselves from land and been flying out far over the ocean. So that's evidence not only did these guys get up in the air, but they were actually able to stay up in the air for quite some time.
Or perhaps they were eaten by a sea swimming creature.
Right. That is certainly a possibility, Rob, and one that I'm not sure the researchers actually addressed in this study.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from studying pterosaur fossils to learn more about these ancient creatures, to studying feces to learn more about the creatures that live in our intestines. This next story is about all of the microbes swarming around in your gut right now.
What were researchers trying to get at by studying feces?
Well, Rob, they were trying to find out why we have particular species of bacteria in our gut. We actually have up to 1,000 different species of bacteria in our gut, and most other animals do too. These bacteria actually are really important for us. They help us digest food, they make vitamins for us, and yes, sometimes they even produce gas, but they're doing a lot of positive things. But the thing is that researchers really don't know how they got there in the first place and why different species of animals have different species of bacteria and different numbers of those bacteria in their guts.
Well, based on all the products that are being marketed nowadays, probiotics and things like that, I would guess it has a lot to do with what we eat.
Well, and that's been a very popular theory that our diet actually has a really large influence on these bacteria. And that's what researchers set out to confirm in this study, or at least try to confirm. And so what they did was they looked at feces of 26 animals in the wild, 3 subspecies of chimpanzees, 2 species of gorilla, and 2 humans. And if you're curious, 1 from Arizona and 1 from the Central African Republic. So people that live in very different parts of the world.
Suggesting they have very different diets too.
Exactly. And what the researchers found was they sequenced all the DNA of the bacteria in all of these fecal samples, which is a clue to the bacteria that are living in your gut. And they found, as people had expected, that different animals, that the gorillas had different number and type of bacteria than the chimpanzees did, and the chimps had different numbers and types than humans did. But they also noticed something really interesting, that the animals that were more closely related had a lot more gut bacteria in common than those that weren't. So, for example, we're very closely related to chimps on the evolutionary tree, and it turns out the bacteria that we have in our gut is actually very similar to the bacteria that they have in their gut, and actually not as similar to the bacteria that gorillas have in their guts.
So the types of species in our bodies map to the evolutionary tree of life?
Well, it's not an exact map, obviously, but what the researchers did find is that it seems like the closer our evolutionary relationship to another animal, the more we'll have in common with their gut bacteria. So that's the first piece of evidence that seems to throw diet out the window, because even though diet may play a role, it seems that these evolutionary relationships are more important. The other thing that seems to negate the effect of diet is that these 2 humans, which live in very different parts of the world, probably very different cultures, and like you said, probably very different diets, actually had very similar gut bacteria. So the fact that we were the same species seems to matter a lot more than what our diet was.
Does this finding suggest that we co-evolved with the bacterial species that are growing in us?
That's one possibility. The other possibility is that different species, obviously their guts work a lot differently. They have probably different acidity levels, a lot of different stuff going on. And it's possible the environment of our gut just naturally welcomes certain bacteria and sort of shuts the door on other ones. Some bacteria just wouldn't thrive in our gut. And the more closely related to another animal you are, like us and chimps, we probably have very similar gut environments, and therefore we're going to make a nice home for very similar types of bacteria versus an animal that's much more distantly related. But that's just speculation at this point.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about capturing anti-hydrogen atoms. And this is a key first step to studying antimatter. And also a story about lying snakes. This isn't about snakes lying around. It's about snakes that fib. And for Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about the final days of this current U.S. Congress and what it means for things like climate legislation and funding for various scientific agencies. And also a story about the rock stars of science. Who are the rock stars in various scientific fields? You can find out on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, plus all the stories on the science policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.